We're going to have our sermon in kind of a special place today. We've got Nancy and Walter Ray joining us for the sermon, which I'm really excited about. And we'll be doing that together in the lobby in the narthex to do a little bit more space together. But I think that'll be a nice change of pace for our setting also. And I have to say that it was kind of a fun change of pace to be able to hear that special music this morning. One of the things that stood out for me was actually the Battle Hymn of the Republic. I know that for myself and many people that follow English soccer in particular, one of the times that we actually hear that song the most is as it's been adapted to basically fan cheers for certain favorite teams. And so the one I like to follow, Tottenham Hotspur, does one where they say, "Glory, glory, Tottenham Hotspur." And many people know it for Manchester United. And so there's a part of me that hears that refrain, and it's hard to get the soccer out of my brain. But it's good to be able to hear it in church and remember that that was first and foremost a hymn that was written to remind us of how God moves forward in society and that we can follow as people of faith. But that actually has a really interesting history to it also that I think will help us get into our sermon this morning. So the Battle Hymn of the Republic is one that we often think of as being a very traditional kind of patriotism forward type of song, but it has a really interesting history that gives us a whole picture of some of that dynamic, again, where we're going to see that range of the way God calls us as people of faith to operate within society, going first by the values of our faith, and then hopefully having our other areas of influence in society, as a nation, in our places of business, wherever it might be, to be ruled by those values of faith first. And so hopefully we can help all those other areas of influence be their best because our faith is animating us. You may or may not know that the Battle Hymn of the Republic was taken from a melody that was celebrating the resistance battle in Kansas by John Brown. And in fact, even the adapted lyrics, it was originally John Brown's body is, I think, a rolling in the grave, but his soul is marching on, meaning that the spirit of his desire to see the slaves freed was continuing to go forward in the country even after he had been unsuccessful. The adapted lyrics that put more focus on God and God's values, hopefully calling us to help make men and women free. That's the last verse, the last line of the last verse of that hymn, was written by the wife of one of the people who actually funded that rebellion. And then that went on to be a refrain that was commonly sung by the Union forces in the Civil War and has continued to be then used as a battle hymn, as it said, in the country. But it came first from that dynamic of there's tension, there's division, there is things that are not being lifted up all the way yet in our country, and we want to see especially God's values moved forward for our country to be its best self. And interestingly, some of the ways that that hymn and its lyrics have most been used in public discourse since then going forward include the speeches of Martin Luther King and lifting up the civil rights movement for racial equality. That was a common motif of his, was to interweave the lyrics from that hymn into his sermons to show how civil rights and racial equality were a part of what God wanted for any country, but in particular this country where we still needed to make a lot of progress during Dr. King's time. And those lyrics were included in his very last sermon, where he was lifting up not only racial equality, but also more rights for workers and laborers who were not being given the right opportunity at that time, he felt. And so, again, showing how God leads us forward to express our best values. This even happened further into our current discourse, where the first African-American bishop of the Episcopal Church here in the U.S. Also, his name is Michael B. Curry, and he was nominated in July of 2015, so we're about at the five-year anniversary of that. He also loves to use the lyrics from this him. And so we see again that this is something that we often, it brings up a sense of great pride in the best values of our country, but it also has that history of being a way to inspire us when we want to see our country continue to improve and do things even better, especially to embody the values of our faith that we hold up the most. And so we have to acknowledge that in our faith, that is a tension, that we are called to be followers of God first, but we're called to be followers of God in all aspects of our life, including in the public sphere, in shaping society, in helping countries be their best selves. And we see this throughout the Bible. We saw it in the Old Testament, scripture that we saw today, where God worked through kings, but God also worked through prophets that were lifting up very important critiques. And so all of that was meant to bring God's purposes most of all, and in particular, Israel to bless not only itself, but all the nations around it. And into the New Testament, we also see that Jesus showed love to not only his own people, but to Roman soldiers, to foreigners like the Samaritans and the Canaanites, and that believed that God could work through and have relationship with all of those different types of people, that we're encouraged to be good citizens in the Bible, but also that we acknowledge that just as the early church was often persecuted because they were showing loyalty to Jesus over loyalty to the emperor, that we may sometimes need to, in showing our loyalty to Jesus, help whatever society or country that we're a part of, again, be its best self in line with those values. And we can be thankful for every time that we see that, and we can be encouraged that God will walk with us anytime we want to work for that continued improvement. And that can sometimes take on very big dimensions, or that can often just be something that we figure out how to live our life from day to day and week to week and as individuals. And so I invited Nancy and Walter to share with us their thoughts about what it means to root themselves in the values of their faith and to live it out in the public sphere. They've had wonderful lives and examples of different ways that they've done that, different organizations and institutions they've been a part of as citizens, and I think that they'll have some great insight. And so, Nancy and Walter, first, I was curious, what values from your faith are most important to you, and how you make choices, treat other people, and hope things go in this country and in the world?
Well, myself, I feel that the things I love from my faith, number one, to serve others, to be non-judgmental, if that's possible, and to show compassion. And my choice in life to be a nurse was, I hope, accomplished a lot of those things. Do you want to go say yours, or do you want me to just continue?
Well, I can certainly echo what you said about the values. You know, those are values that that we strive to deal with and to hold up in everything that we try to do. But in particular, sometimes it's very it's not as obvious as you would like it to be. When I was much younger, I always tried to deal with questions that always popped in my head about why certain things happen and what was the role that God played in it. I've always felt that God's always around me. My biggest challenge was always trying to pay attention to what was being said to me and how to follow and go on the right path. So equality, and compassion, which is extremely hard for me in particular. I have been known to have a temper, and the reality is that it's a journey that I think we all individually go down, and it's hard. It's just extremely hard, but I think that it's the correct one to go.
Yeah. I really appreciated how you both shared, I think, some values that we can definitely hold up easily as foundational to our faith, and described what it looks like for you to see that as connected to your relationship with God and how God has formed those values in you and helped you see those as important. So what are some of the ways that you feel you've been able to live out those values in society? Could be through your job or ways you've volunteered, relationships, personal experiences, whatever ways that come to mind that you try to live those out.
And actually, Nancy will go into a lot of her history as a nurse, which I think is highly commendable. Mine is a little bit different. I started out a different route, but I was able to see from a civil rights standpoint, I was in the Navy and stationed in Oakland, California in 68 and 69, in which the anti-war movement, as long as well as the Black Panther movement, there was a lot of social upheaval, and there was marches in San Francisco, large marches, and we actually had a nurse that flew over the neighbor hospital and dropped anti-war leaflets, and so we were in a different kind of world. Now, granted, we're in the medical side of the house, and so we weren't war fighters per se. We had to deal with the fallout of the war, and it was not pleasant. And for someone who was 19 years old, it was quite eye-opening to me about what happens, what constitutes a hero. And I saw a lot of heroes, but war should always be the last resort. And that was probably my biggest takeaway. Nancy has a much not dissimilar.
Yes. Well, I started out as a nurse at Children's Hospital, and at the time they were very short on nurses, so I worked a lot of hours. In fact, one time I worked 30 days in a row because I was the only nurse on my ward, and there was no one to replace me. But I remember that Children's went over to the Philippines and brought over 30-some nurses. They bought three houses where Fisher House is now, and they housed these 30 nurses and brought them in to work with us. It was very challenging because even though they spoke English, it was very much to their dialect, so it was very hard to understand. So I had to learn a lot of non-judgment and a lot of control to be able to communicate with them and to take care of the patients at the same time. So that was a very interesting time working with those Philippine nurses. So I became great friends with them, and I learned a lot of good recipes too. During that time, after that, I decided that I needed to do something else. And since my father was in the Army National Guard and my brother was already in the Air Force, I thought, I think I'll go try and serve my country. And just because I thought that's a good place for a nurse to go, there's a lot to do. I wanted to go in the Air Force, but they didn't want to take me. And the Army at the time was only taking degree people, and I had it. Navy, and they took me, and so I knew nothing about the Navy, but I sure learned. And I went in the Navy, and they told me, since I had worked with children, and that's my desire all my life, is to work with children. When I joined the Navy, they said, well, you know, you'll probably never see children again. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll learn, I'll do whatever you ask of me. Well, the first place I got stationed at, I was put on a children's ward, so I did get to start with children. And then I was there, and then after that I got sent to Key West, where it was a real challenge because our doctors were all from different countries. Even though they were in the United States military, I had a doctor from Poland, I had a doctor from
Portugal,
and try those challenges of these doctors who speak differently, who know their medicine differently, a little bit differently we do. That was a challenge to work with them. In fact, I have to tell this story. We wore whites, and the doctors and everybody wore whites. Well, the one from Portugal, he didn't know that you had to wear white underwear under your uniform. So he was quite decorative. And I remember one of my chiefs came to me and said, you need to tell him he's not in uniform. He needs to wear white under his white uniform. And I said, I'm not telling him. I like it. You tell him. So that was the thing in Key West, those kind of differences and learning to cooperate with people you don't normally work with or you don't understand where they're coming from. What was the other thing? I was going to talk about it. I was sent from Key West. I was chosen. Every year, one nurse was chosen to go to California to become a pediatric nurse practitioner, and I got chosen to go do that, so I became a pediatric nurse practitioner. So then, of course, I was taking care of children in the military, and I used to get questioned a lot by civilian people, why would they need a person in the military who takes care of children? I mean, these are people going to war and stuff. And I understand where people come from. They think, why would you need to take care of children? But you have to remember that those people who are going to war or who are serving their country, they have families. And they're not going to do the best job they could do if they don't know their families being taken care of. And so that was one of my jobs, was to make sure that their children were taken care of. And not only the children of, and we have to realize that there are many different kinds of people in our military. I took care of children from all different kinds of cultures. I had to learn what those culture differences were because there were some exams you could do one way and there were some exams you had to do another way based on their culture. So that was something else I had to be compassionate about and learn to do correctly. You want to talk? Because I could talk.
Well, I would just emphasize what Nancy's saying about we obviously, I ended up spending 31 years in the Navy, and there was a reason after the initial couple of years of not being too happy where I was. I found real value in being in the military, especially the medical side of the military. It was structured, but at the same time, there was equality. You know, there was no question about whether you were white, black, brown. I mean, it was all based upon your position in the hierarchy of the organization. And we treated everyone the same. You were a patient, and we were goal-oriented. We had a mission, we had to accomplish it, and we weren't, we weren't focused on making money. And I stress that. It's all about service. We were servicing the families and the active duty military folk in achieving wellness or, again, we weren't war fighters, so we had a different role. But it was the same, mission and taking care of people. And I always kind of reflect back to what I think Jesus was all about. And that was equality, loving one another, a pact, compassion, and just taking care of people, treating people as you would like to be treated. And that's what I always kind of saw the biggest deal about the military in the medical side of the house. We took care of each other. We were a family. We were a brotherhood, however you want to couch it. And for that reason, Nancy and I still stay involved with veterans organizations.
Yeah. I got to say, one of my favorite things about this sermon series that we've been doing is to hear both the personal experiences and the range of things that people have for living out their faith and the things that God has lifted up for them that we may not always take into account. You can hear so much the foundation of love and service like you both shared. And we know that that's been true of your participation here at the church. We can easily acknowledge how your spirit of service went into your time in the military, but then to also hear the range of ways that you live that out and the range of perspectives that that meant for both of you in doing it, that not only maybe in the first things that come to mind for us when we think of the military, but also your encounter with other cultures as part of that, that you brought that love and service and desire to have a sense of unity and inclusion, even to people that were very different. That in wanting to serve your country, that you also wanted to see your country be at its best. And so acknowledging and having empathy for those people that were bringing voice to messages that would have our country continue to be its best self, be responsible if we're going to use military force, take care of the people who are in the military rather than forgetting them. I know that that is something you continue to be so active in, as you mentioned, with your veterans group and foundation. And I think that's a great example. And again, we've been acknowledging throughout this series how we really need all of us, all of our perspectives, all of our backgrounds, to be able to get the full picture of God, to be able to share a fuller experience of God from each other's perspectives, because none of us can claim that or hold on to that ourselves. And so it's been great to get this range and to hear that from both of you as well on this topic. It's so important and such a gift, and I know that we'll continue to get that sense of what all is God is doing through us and for us as we want to be our best selves, living our values, and also help the society and institutions around us. I know that you both have had different moments where you've helped try to give a perspective in your professional lives as well. And so on that, and thinking again about that range of participants and protesters in the Bible and in church history that are all, I would say, good people of faith and good patriots in the countries that they're a part of, what are some of the ways that your values have made you look at the world and want to see something change? How do you hope God continues to use you and other people of faith to have our society shaped by our best values, like love and service that you've been lifting up?
Well, I think in particular, the recent events of the last few months have really opened my eyes about a lot of these social issues. The Black Lives Matter movement, because again, I can reflect back in being in Oakland in 68 and 69, Oakland, California is 95% black. I never really understood, because again, I grew up in Grand Forks, North Dakota. We didn't have any really minorities in town. It was a small town, and so I lived a different kind of world. And even in those years in which I always thought I was more sensitive to social issues and things of that nature, it was in the last few months where it really kind of finally hit the right chord, you know, that made sense to me. I said, there's a real issue here. It would make sense to me that Jesus would be out there leading those protest marches, because he believes in equality. I mean, that's what I always took away. He believed in equality. He said everybody should be treated the same, so it shouldn't make any difference. And equality of everything. It should be equality in education. It should be equality in job opportunities. It should be all these things. Because we're all the same. We're human beings. And that's why I could never, it really became even more evident for me in the last few months in particular, maybe because, you know, I also had more time to contemplate my navel. There's a lot of, America is by far is the best country in the world, in the history of the world. But we have issues, and we need to recognize them. I love history. I read a lot of history. And you realize that, you know, we don't always do everything that we say that we should do in the correct way. We've had a long history with Native Americans. We have obviously a long black history in this country. And I guess my point is I've really had my eyes open more in the last few months. I'm surprised it took that many years, but you know, as you get older, you know, things might hopefully start sink in. But I don't know what else you want to add to that kind of.
Well, I just think we as a people have to learn to look past the color of people's skin. There is no color. Everybody is the same color. We're all the same. We're God's people. We're put on this earth to do whatever we're chosen to do. And we all need to help each other do that. Whatever it takes. Believe me, right now it's really hard being stuck inside or out in the yard all the time.
With me.
Yeah, with him. I mean, there's only so many puzzles you can put together. But I just really think we all have to get past what we see on people's skin or in the way their eyes are shaped or the way they talk. We have to get past that and just realize they're just God's people.
Amen. Thanks so much. And I appreciate, too, how you lifted up a lot of the things that not only do we see in the Bible about how we struggle as people to live up to God's calling for us, but that we have this wonderful model and call that God gives us to live up to and to strive for, but that that continues to be relevant and a part of church history and what the church has done well or had to improve in itself going forward and how we continue to try to do that. And so we know that we've got people who are dealing with continued fights for racial justice. We know that we're continuing to look for the ways to take care of each other in the face of a disease, from physical health to mental health to economic stability, and that those are going to be increasingly things that we see people struggle with, and that we want to, again, have that ideal of love and service that you both lifted up so well this morning as we try to do that. And I hope all of you watching can hear as well, as we continue to try to be God's people in our own church family, living these very values, all of the ways, again, that we're lifting up in this series. We want to see all of those ways that we each have felt called by God, that we have seen God work through our lives to bring continued growth and transformation and health and peace and grace and change and love to the people around us. And so we're going to need all of us to be able to say, these are the things that are going on in society already and in the institutions around us that are really good, and we need to give them more support and more amplification and more emphasis. And then these are the things that we see that we want to see changed, and that we need to give our effort and our voice and our love and our support for those things that need to be changed. And the willingness sometimes it takes to be able to, if we feel like we resonate more with one viewpoint or the other in that, to have trouble looking at the other side and being to say, maybe God is calling me to set a little bit of my own perspective aside to give support to something that has been more unfamiliar for me. But we know that we have God's grace and forgiveness to be able to do that. We have our wonderful close relationships as a church family to share in that and to appreciate each other, and how we can give each other sometimes emphases that we hear from some people that we need to hear, sometimes a different emphasis from someone else. All of that is the tapestry of us following God and being God's church family. And we can really appreciate and lift up the ways that people of faith have led on issues like abolition, indigenous people's rights, women's rights, civil rights for people of color, workers' rights, care of the environment. All of those things have often been from people of faith. Some of the things that have been the best bedrock values of our country and other countries have come from people of faith and the perspective of those values. So we've been able to set a start and continue an improvement because God has led us. And I think that we can remember, in particular with that from our Mark 12 passage, that we are called to live our faith in all of our different areas of influence. We give to Caesar what is Caesar's, right? Because there's in that passage, there's that image, right? There's some money, there's some things in the public sphere that have the empires or the institutions' fingers in and that they're participating in, and so we are to participate in that as well. So we give to that, but when Jesus says, and give to God what is God's, we have to remember the other image that's a part of that, and that is that we, our entire selves, our entire being, our entire identity is created as the image of God. And so the same way that because of an image we would give to Caesar what is Caesar's, because of an image we give to God what is God's. And that's our whole selves. And when we do that, God helps us have our priorities right, and also through God's Spirit, through God's empowerment, live those values that will shape in a positive way all of those other parts of our lives, all of our other roles, all of our other identities, all of our other participations, for country, for job, for family, for city, for whatever it might be. And it's great to have God with us doing that. As a way of bonding ourselves together, we'll move into communion now. And so I invite you, if you have...